All participants, please stand by. Your conference is ready to begin. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to Teck Resources Q2 earnings call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. This conference call is being recorded on Thursday, July 28th, 2016. I would now like to turn the conference call over to Greg Waller, Vice President, Investor Relations and Strategic Analysis. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much, Valerie, and good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining us for our second quarter results conference call. Before we begin, I'd like to draw your attention to the forward-looking information on slide two. This presentation contains forward-looking statements regarding our business. However, there are various risks and uncertainties which may cause actual results to vary. Teck does not assume the obligation to update any forward-looking statement. With that, I'd like to turn the call over to Don Lindsay, our President and CEO.
Thanks very much, Greg, and good morning, everyone. I will begin with a brief overview of our second quarter results, and then Ron Millos, our CFO, will provide additional color from a financial perspective. We will then conclude with a Q&A session when Ron, myself, and additional members of our senior management team would be happy to answer any questions. While we have seen positive developments in zinc and steelmaking coal, prices overall remain at relatively low levels. Our focus remains on cost management and operating execution. We have continued to deliver results on these fronts, including significant reductions in cash unit costs at our operations. As a result, we have lowered our coal and copper cost guidance for the full year. We have also increased our production guidance in coal and tightened our guidance for copper and mined zinc production, which represents a slight increase in the midpoint of those guidance ranges. We also executed a series of transactions in the second quarter to strengthen our financial position, and this has extended our near-term maturities and credit lines, essentially clearing their runway through 2020, well after Fort Hills is expected to be fully operating. Ron will speak to these transactions in greater detail a little later. We now expect to exceed our original target for year-end cash balance, ending the year with more than $700 million. Finally, we were honored to be named once again to the Best 50 Corporate Citizens in Canada for the fourth consecutive year by Corporate Knights, and the ranking was based on 12 sustainability measures. Looking at an overview of our Q2 results on slide four, compared with the same quarter last year, revenues declined 13% to $1.7 billion, primarily due to lower prices for all of our principal products. Overall, gross profit before depreciation and amortization was $536 million, and bottom-line profit attributable to shareholders was $15 million. After removing unusual items, adjusted profit attributable to shareholders was $3 million, or $0.01 per share. Touching on some operational highlights from the second quarter on slide five, our operations continue to perform well, particularly on cost reductions. Unit costs are down in both our coal and copper business units. On a U.S. dollar basis, total cash unit costs, including capitalized stripping, were $66 per ton for coal, down $15 per ton from Q2 last year. Copper cash unit costs, again including capitalized stripping, are currently $1.48 per pound, or $0.21 per pound lower in the same period. Turning to slide six, we have heard that some investors think we have been under-stripping in our coal business due to our reduced capitalized stripping costs. I want to emphasize that this is not the case. As the chart shows, we continue to move waste material in line with our long-term mining plans and in line with our coal release. Our total material moved has continued to increase, and we now are moving in excess of 70 million bank cubic meters per quarter as we have grown coal production to 6.5 million tons per quarter. We did have a dip in Q3 last year as we took 3 weeks of downtime at each of our mines to manage coal inventories in what was a very different coal market. The fact that our capitalized stripping costs are down is due to our reduced operating costs overall. Capitalized stripping is just a portion of our operating costs that we have to capitalize, and those costs have benefited from the same productivity improvements, the same cost reductions that the rest of the operation has. You will note that we disclose our strip ratios in our quarterly reports, and these have remained very consistent, as demonstrated by this chart. I trust that this puts that unwarranted concern to rest. Running through some additional highlights by business unit and starting with steelmaking coal on slide seven, Coal sales were lower than we originally expected by the equivalent of approximately one Capesize vessel. Late vessel arrivals resulted in some sales shifting into Q3. Some customers were also bidding at opportunistically low prices, which we did not accept. As we flagged last quarter, our realized price reflected a smaller discount to the quarterly contract price than our usual range at around 99% due to the high spot prices in the quarter. On a Canadian dollar basis, though, our average realized price was down $9 per ton to $107 compared to last year's Q2. Production was up slightly, extending the streak of excellent production results from the mines. Elkview, Green Hills, and Lion Creek each set new production records for Q2 and for the first half of the year. We continue to expect production to be weighted more heavily to the second half of the year, with the majority of our annual plant maintenance shutdowns now complete. Our cost reduction efforts continue to produce significant results in coal, helped by lower diesel prices. In Canadian dollar terms, cost of sales is down $6 per ton compared with Q2 last year. Now, looking forward to Q3, we expect our highest sales quarter for the year, with at least 6.8 million tons in sales. Coal prices have been agreed with the majority of our customers based on the US $92.50 per ton for the highest quality products. Turning to our base metals business, starting with copper on slide 8. Sales were lower and the realized price was down by 61 cents US. Production was also down slightly overall when compared with Q2 last year, but it was higher than last quarter. As anticipated by the mine plan, Antamina had significantly higher production due to higher grade and recovery and a significant increase in copper-only ore processed. This was more than offset by lower production at other sites, including Andacollo and Quebrada Blanca. At Highland Valley, production was down slightly as we continue to transition from the Valley pit to the Lornex pit. Our cost reduction efforts have also produced significant results in copper. On a US dollar basis, C1 unit costs, net of byproduct credits, were down 15% per pound to US $1.34. Our controllable costs, which are total cash costs before byproduct margins, were down 27 cents US per pound. Looking forward, production is still anticipated to decline over the next two quarters, as previously announced, with the final quarter being the weakest due to significantly lower grades at Highland Valley. Just part of the mine plan, nothing we can do about it. Our zinc business unit results are summarized on slide 9. Please note that Antamina's zinc-related financial results are reported in our copper business unit as the mine forms part of our copper business unit. Antamina zinc production and sales are included in production and sales in the zinc business unit. Revenues were up in the quarter with higher sales volumes from Red Dog due to timing of shipments. Our realized price was down by 13 cents US per pound in the quarter. However, the LME cash price broke through US a dollar in mid-July. Zinc and concentrate production at Red Dog was similar to a year ago. At our Trail operations, refined zinc production was down and refined lead production set a new quarterly record. Overall, gross profit before depreciation and amortization was down due to the lower average zinc price in the quarter. Looking forward, Red Dog shipping season has begun with the first vessel sailing on July 6th, and we expect sales of 150,000 tons of contained zinc in Q3 and 190,000 tons in Q4, which reflects the normal seasonal pattern of Red Dog sales. Now, an update on Fort Hills on slide 10. Engineering is essentially complete and construction has now surpassed the 60% mark overall. This photo shows the progress on the ore processing plant as of last week. Wildfires threatening the region in May did not cause any damage to the project or any of its associated regional infrastructure. Construction on site was interrupted for approximately 1 month. The project is currently back at planned workforce levels. Suncor is currently assessing the impact of the interruption and schedule mitigation options, and they expect to provide a project update at the end of the year, including cost and schedule targets. And despite the interruption, first oil is still expected near the end of 2017. On slide 11, turning to some highlights from our markets, starting with the steelmaking coal business, We are seeing some positive developments in the steelmaking coal market. In the hard coking coal component of the steelmaking coal market, where we primarily supply and compete, we estimate that the market is very close to being balanced. Pricing is starting to reflect that. Coking coal demand from a number of market areas, including China, appear to be improving. In China, steel production hit a two-year high in June, and we are seeing tightness in the domestic coal market as mines cut their operating days from 330 days per year to 276 days as a part of the government's supply-side reform. Coking coal imports between March and June were on an annualized basis at the 60 million ton level, which compared with 38 million tons in 2015. Outside of China, we are continuing to see curtailments. U.S. exports are continuing to decline. There have been some recent production disruptions in Australia due to rain. Looking forward, the Q3 benchmark price of US $92.50 represents the second consecutive quarterly increase. And most of you will probably know the spot price is currently well above that. Looking at the zinc market on slide 12, as always, the focus is on what's happening in China. And quite apparently, the supply of zinc concentrate from both domestic production and imports is declining. As you can see from the chart in the upper left, total domestic production plus imports has fallen from around 500,000 tons per month in 2013 to a run rate of about 435,000 tons per month currently. And availability of imported concentrates has declined significantly due to the well-publicized recent mine closures. And we see this at the smelters with their working inventories of concentrates declining by half in the past 6 months. To maintain the supply of overall zinc units, China has had to turn to metal imports, and this shift has started to be reflected in import numbers in the chart on the lower left, which shows that Chinese zinc metal imports are up around 80% from the first half of 2015. We know there is other data circulating that indicates that China's zinc mine production is increasing, and we don't think that data is correct. It is estimates only, and it's based on metal production. In the end, the degree of market tightness for concentrates is evidenced by spot treatment charges falling by around 40% in the past year. And with that, I will turn it over to Ron Millos for some comments on our financial results.
Okay, thanks, Don. I've summarized our changes in our cash balance for the quarter on slide 13. And as you can see, cash flow from operations and working capital was $339 million. The liquidity management transaction that we completed in the quarter reflected in the cash flow statement this quarter. We received 1.6 billion Canadian from the two debt issues, and which we used to purchase the outstanding notes due in 2017, 18, and 19 under our cash tender offer. In addition, we spent $325 million on capital projects, including Fort Hills. Our capitalized stripping costs were $122 million. We also received $89 million proceeds from sale of investments and other assets. We paid $74 million in interest and principal on our debt and $29 million on dividends. After these expenditures on financial investments and other assets, the effect of exchange rate changes on our cash and cash equivalents and distributions to non-controlling interests, we ended the quarter with cash and short-term investments of just under $1.3 billion. In addition, we've previously talked about our target for the core business of coal, copper, and zinc, excluding our investment in Fort Hills to be cash flow neutral or positive. And in the second quarter, our core business generated $132 million in positive free cash flow. Moving on to the next slide, our second quarter pricing adjustments are summarized. Overall, we had $1 million of negative pricing adjustments this quarter, compared with $32 million of negative adjustments in Q2 of last year. And these adjustments are included in our income statement under other operating income and expense. This was an unusual quarter for pricing adjustments due to the silver price increase. Zinc was up 14 cents per US 14 cents per pound from the end of Q1 to the end of Q2, so we had a positive settlement adjustment there. Copper price was unchanged, but outstanding volumes changed, and we had a small positive result as a result. Silver, however, increased by roughly $3 per ounce. Just as that would contribute to a positive settlement adjustment on the sale of concentrate, it also contributes to a negative adjustment on the purchase of concentrates at Trail. And since Red Dog sales volumes are typically low in Q2, the ongoing purchase of concentrates at Trail had a greater impact this quarter, and that resulted in a negative pricing adjustment. The chart on the left represents a simplified relationship between the change in copper and zinc prices and the reported settlement adjustment, and usually provides a good estimate of our pricing adjustments each quarter. The overall settlement adjustment this quarter was at the bottom end of the range suggested by our model, and that was primarily due to the impact of silver. And as a reminder, refining and treatment charges and the Canadian-US dollar exchange rate should be considered in your analysis of the impact on price changes in the adjustment, and you should also consider taxes and royalties when analyzing the impact on our profit. Turning to our financial position on slide 15, as Don mentioned, we executed a series of transactions in the second quarter to further strengthen our financial position by extending the maturities of our debt. In May, we extended the maturity of US $1 billion of our US $1.2 billion revolving credit facility by 2 years to June 2019. And that required us to provide guarantees on this facility and our US $3 billion facility from certain of our wholly owned subsidiaries. Extending the maturity of the credit facility was key to us issuing US $650 million of 5-year and US $600 million of 8-year senior secured notes, which have the same guarantees provided to our revolving facilities. The new notes, which were priced at 8% and 8.5% respectively, have call features in 2 and 3 years' time respectively, which provides us with potential deleveraging opportunities. The chart on this page shows the changes to our debt maturity profile, with the red circle highlighting the US $1.25 billion of our shortest term notes that were repurchased under the tender offer. And the green bars show the issuance of the new US 650 and US 600 million 5- and 8-year unsecured notes. So overall, we have significantly reduced the amount of debt and bank credit maturing over the next few years. That enhances our near-term liquidity and clears the runway by leaving us with no significant maturities until after the completion and ramp-up of the Fort Hills project. Looking at slide 16, we currently have liquidity of about $5.4 billion, and that's made up of our cash balance plus the Canadian dollar equivalent of our US $3 billion credit facility. As you're probably well aware, we have two primarily revolving credit facilities. The US $3 billion facility matures in July of 2020, and that remains undrawn at this time. And as previously mentioned, we have the US $1.2 billion facility, which was just amended, as I mentioned, and $1 billion of that now expires in June 2019. It currently has US $806 million in letters of credit issued against it, and we expect to keep the balance available for letter of credit requirements if necessary. We also continue to maintain a Canadian $1.65 billion in uncommitted bilateral credit facilities for the issuance of letters of credit, primarily for future reclamation obligations, and of that, Canadian $150 million is still available for use. There are no financial covenants in our public debt indenture, and just one financial covenant in our bank credit agreement, which requires us to maintain a debt-to-debt plus equity ratio below 50%. And as of June 30th, we were at 35%, and our net debt to net debt plus equity ratio was 32%. Going forward, we intend to maintain a strong financial position. As Don mentioned earlier, we now expect to exceed our original target for the year-end cash balance and end the year with at least $700 million. And this, of course, assumes current commodity prices and exchange rates, and that we meet our revised 2016 guidance for production costs and capital spending. And it also assumes that we maintain our existing U.S. dollar debt levels and have no unusual transactions. Moving on to the next slide, we have revised some of our previous guidance for 2016. In steelmaking coal, we increased our production guidance by 1 million tons to 26 to 27 million tons. And we have also lowered our site cost guidance range to $42 to $46 per ton, and our transportation cost range to $33 to $35 per ton. In copper, we have tightened our production guidance range to 310,000 to 320,000 tons, and we've lowered our C1 unit cost net of byproducts range by 10 cents per pound to between US $1.40 and US $1.50 per pound. In zinc, we've tightened our guidance, our production guidance range for mine zinc to 645,000 to 665,000 tons, and that includes production from Red Dog, Pondere, and our share of production from Antamina. And with that, I will turn the call back to Don. Don, you on mute?
Don, if you're there, you're on mute still.
Thank you. Yes, I was on mute. I apologize. So in summary on slide 18, looking across the mining industry from our vantage point, we think we're pretty well positioned relative to others as we come out of the cycle. Unlike many of our peers, we are not in a position where we need to issue equity or to sell off our core producing assets. What differentiates us is that we are going through this down cycle doing things to give us the best upside when the upcycle returns. We will have production growth from Fort Hills, while most others are not building. No operating assets will have been sold, while many others are selling mines, and there will be no equity dilution, while many have issued more shares. Therefore, we will have more production per share coming out of this down cycle, while others will have less production per share. At the same time, we are maintaining strong liquidity, looking for opportunities to manage our debt maturity profile and to reduce debt. We have always believed that if we can successfully achieve these things, our shares will be better positioned coming out of this cycle than our competitors. And with that, we would be happy to answer your questions. And please note that some of our management team members are on the line in different locations, so there may be a brief pause after you ask your question while we figure out who to allocate it to. So, operator, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Lindsay. Please press star one at this time if you have a question. If you are using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before making your selection. Please limit your inquiry to one question plus a follow-up question. After that, if you have further questions, please rejoin the queue. There will be a brief pause while the participants register for questions. Thank you for your patience. Our first question is from Yvonne Kurtz with Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi. Good morning, everyone. So my question is on asset sales. I know earlier in the year when the commodity environment was a little more bleak, you talked at, about perhaps monetizing Wintering Hills or some of the port assets. Wondering if the thought there has changed with the rally in met coal and zinc?
I don't think it's really changed. I would say that there's no feeling of urgency at all. But these are things that actually take quite a long time. When we talk about infrastructure, we're talking about the Waneta Power Dam, the Neptune Port, Winter Hills windmills, and so on. We are still looking at them carefully. We recognize that infrastructure assets such as these tend to trade at much higher multiples of EBITDA than a diversified mining and metals company will ever trade at, so there's logic to it. But you do want to get it right, and that's something that that certainly takes time, which is what we found when we sold a third of Waneta last time in 2009. So we're working through it to see if it can come to pass to make sense, but we aren't feeling any pressure to do it.
Great, thanks for that. And my follow-up is just on your maybe dig a little deeper into the supply side on met coal. I mean, we've seen the supply side reforms impacting coal far more than steel so far this year in China, and there's been a little bit of flooding. So, it feels like the met coal price is on better footing right now. How do you think that's going to impact, I guess, one industry supply response? Do you see, potential for mine restarts out of Australia or maybe a decline in the rate of curtailments in the U.S.? And specifically for tech, I mean, how are you thinking about that? Do you still think that 27 production will be relatively in line with 2016? Any updated thoughts on Quintet?
Yeah, I'll answer the last question, then turn it over to Rhea Foley for the first part. We are not making any plans to increase production further from where we're at now. We have earlier announced that Coal Mountain will be closing down in 2017, and that we will consolidate our production around the four key mines in Elk Valley. There are no plans to restart any activity at Quintet. So with that, over to you, Rael, on the first part.
All right. Thanks, Don. So typically for capacity to return to the market, mining companies want to see prices improve, not only over a short period of time, but forecasted to last in order to step forward and make the decision to inject significant capital to restart operations, rehire employees, and bring back equipment. So at the current quarterly benchmark price of $92.50, Wood Mackenzie still estimating that about 25% of the seaborne hard coking coal is operating at negative margin, and around 75% of the U.S. hard coking coal exports are cash negative. So with respect to where the restarts could come from, we need to go back and look at the time when those production cuts were made, what pricing levels were, and what are the remaining coal reserves for that capacity that was shut. At the time the production curtailments were done, pricing was below break-even, most likely, for those operations. So that supports the fact that pricing would need to improve further for some of those idled operations to restart. And just to add on your question with respect to Teck, our increase of 1 million tons in our 2016 production guidance reflects our view that this is supported by demand and the fact that we've also achieved strong cost and production performance at our operations.
Thanks for the details.
Thank you. Our next question is from Chris Terry with Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi guys, thanks for taking my question. Also related to the coal division, just wanted to explore that a little bit further. Put another way, so in 2016, if the met coal price hadn't rebounded, would you still have been producing what you are today? I.e., how responsive can you be to price increases over time?
An interesting question. I'll just make an overview comment and then turn it over to Robin Shiremeta. So there's no exact answer to your question. Part of the increase in production, as Rael just mentioned, is related to productivity improvements. I just had a recent swing through four of our sites, and I can tell you that everybody is really actively engaged in finding whatever way possible to be more efficient. And a result of that is increased production and reduced costs. That is just sort of a natural consequence of people, improving truck productivities and so on. If the increase in demand had not occurred, then we would be looking very closely at sales, customer demand, managing inventories, as we did last summer. When the market was in a very weak state and we chose to have rotating shutdowns for 3 weeks at each of the mine sites to manage inventory not dump the incremental ton of coal on the spot market. So if it was sort of back to last year's situation, that's probably what we would have done, or you could see a scenario like that. But I guess what we're saying is it's nowhere close to last year's situation, so we're not. Robin, would you like to add any comment on our productivity activities?
Yeah, maybe just to add to that, which pretty much covered the scope pretty well, but maybe to add to it, the productivity gains that we've seen are quite sustainable, and we've had extremely good engagement with the operations. So our costs are in an area that makes us very competitive, and there's no reason to believe that won't continue. So we've got very good response at the operating level to sustain this kind of performance. So that gives us quite a bit of flexibility in terms of response to a market change.
Okay, thanks for the color. And taking into account Coal Mountain coming to an end in a couple of years, can you just remind us what the latent capacity still in the system might be? Say if we did get a big pickup in prices and you did want to look at additional volumes, what might be possible?
Robin, back to you.
At this stage, we'll be able to absorb the production loss at Coal Mountain in the other four operations. So the current plan is to maintain that production level. We haven't built into any plan an increase in production beyond what we currently have available at the sites.
And I would just add to that, it depends on how significant that price move is. And I guess consistent with Rhea Foley told you about, you know, typically mines want to see a sustained increase in price before they consider restarting a closed operation. You know, Quintet is actually one of the easier ones to get back on. It would be about a year of construction activity and capital. And we clearly are not looking at bringing it back at these price levels. So while we do have an additional 4 million tons of capacity that we could bring on if we thought things were going to be sustainable at much higher levels, we aren't even looking at it at this point.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Our next question is from Orest Wowkodaw with Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. A couple of questions for me also about the coal division. Firstly, in terms of your cost reductions, the reduction in transport costs, is that does that reflect efficiencies, or are you actually getting some kind of pricing or cost, you know, discounts from the rails and the ports here?
Okay, just checking to see if Andrew Stonkus is on the line yet. He was caught.
Yes, Don, I'm on the line.
Go ahead, over to you.
Yeah, thanks, Don. Yeah, cost reduction in the transportation side, it's also a reflection of the diesel fuel prices that we're seeing. So that has an impact on the cost structure for the transportation, and also just the ongoing efficiencies that, along with the operations side, the transportation side is also working with the terminals in terms of maximizing efficiency of the supply chain movement to the customer. So combination of fuel costs and streamline and work on the efficiencies on the port facilities and the performance of the rail service providers.
Okay, so you haven't received any discounts from the rail or the port?
No, we're under contract. We have contracts in place for our service provider from our service providers, and they're being maintained.
Okay, and then just in terms of coal volume, again coming back to your capacity, when I believe Coal Mountain's supposed to close at the end of 2017, there was some talk at the time that you'll be able to make up that 2.25 million ton of production from the other mines. Do you, you know, could we assume that you could maintain something in the 26 to 27 million ton range, excluding Quintet, when Coal Mountain closes?
Back to you, Robin.
Yeah, you bet. We've got solid plans in place to be able to sustain that production with minimal inputs at the other operations. There is enough capacity to absorb Coal Mountain's production.
Okay, so 26 to 27 is a realistic number?
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Greg Barnes with TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Don or whoever else can answer this question. What can you do to increase your zinc mine production in light of what's going on in the zinc market?
I'll make an overview comment and then turn it to Dale. The short-term answer is not much. Long-term, there are a number of different options, but it would take, you know, significant capital and time to be able to do so. We're working on a number of projects at Red Dog, and, you know, at grade varies at Antamina, and so you get some good years in zinc as well, and there's some of that is coming. But Dale, over to you.
Thanks, Don. Greg, just to add a bit of color, Red Dog is performing very well. We are looking at further production optimization projects over the next couple of years, but that really will help to offset any grade fluctuations and future grade declines with the current mine plan. So I think the ability at Red Dog to ramp up production in any significant way is limited. I think really in the short term, looking forward over the next couple of years, the opportunity is really at Antamina, and again, that's associated with the mine plan. At the end of last year, we did provide guidance looking forward for the 2017 to 2019 timeframe, and we put out guidance of an increase at Antamina to approximately the 80,000 ton contained metal range for our share. And that compares to our recent update on guidance for this year of 40 to 45. So really, I think that's the majority of the near-term potential.
Okay, that's great. So what do you think the industry supply response can be, and what price, maybe this is a question for Andrew Stonkus, what kind of price do we need to have zinc mine supply lift higher from here?
Andrew?
Yeah, thanks, Greg. Yeah, I think what we're seeing today is that at these current prices, we're not the project pipeline is still very thin, and we're not seeing significant supply response. I think the question always is what will China do? And if you look at the Chinese mine production, as Don mentioned, the statistics coming out of there are always a little bit suspect. I think the production guidance or production forecasts out of China have tended to be overstated. One thing out of China is we have to remember that the ore grades that they're working with there are quite low in the range of 4 to 5% combined zinc and lead. So the cost structure for the Chinese domestic mine production is challenged, and that's why we're not seeing the supply response as people expect out of China, and also the environmental issues surrounding some of the domestic mine production in China. So we're not seeing a supply response at current prices. So the trend is not significant in terms of new mine production coming on at current prices. So we need something higher. It's a matter of what the trigger price will be, but it's not at the current price level, that's for sure.
Just quickly, do your forecasts assume that Glencore turns their production back on next year?
I wouldn't want to speculate on what Glencore's price point would be for restarts. They were very clear in last October that they wanted to keep the resource in the ground at those prices, and that was done at a price of $1,800. So we're slightly above that, but they haven't made the decision to restart as far as I'm aware.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, I might add, Greg, that one thing that's clear is that Glencore believes that you make more money on price than volume, and they believe in balanced markets and not bringing on that additional ton, which may be lower cost but puts the market into surplus. We believe in that too. We already have a fairly large zinc business. As you may know, for a long time, like over the last 10-year period, I had a policy of, you know, read my lips, no new zinc, because the market was in serious oversupply, and you know, we really kind of believe in that. So I think the key comes down to what Andrew was just talking about in China, and this grade issue is a big one. You know, they have one mine that's 11% zinc, and then all the rest start with a 4, and that's versus current average grade of 6 to 7. So that any new mines they could bring on are going to have that much more capital per ton of capacity, and that much higher operating cost just because of the lower grade. So it's actually a bigger step down percentage-wise than what we're seeing worldwide in copper. So we'll see how it unfolds, but for our purposes, we know you make more money on price than volume, and we've waited a long time for these conditions in zinc to occur, so we'd like to enjoy it for a bit.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Karl Blunden with Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my questions. Just I had one on the balance sheet and then one on the operating side. You know, when you brought the bond deal back a couple months ago, you'd mentioned that on the uncommitted credit facilities, you were looking at reducing some of the bank exposure there through some surety bonds. Can you comment on how that's progressing or how just generally how we should think about the risk in those facilities right now?
Turn that one over to Scott Wilson, please.
Thank you, Carl. Yes, we're continuing to work with a couple of insurers on bringing on some surety bond capacity, and expect to have something in the range of 150 to 200 million in that regard completed in Q3 here.
Yeah, that's helpful. Thanks very much. And then just on Fort Hills, it's been some time since you've provided an update there in terms of what the operating costs might be. Is there any way for us to think about it? You know, first oil end of 2017, we've seen quite significant costs come out of oil production at Suncor's existing operations. Is there any way we can frame the opportunity in terms of how much costs have come down since I think your last update was a couple quarters ago now?
I'll make a couple of comments and then turn it over to Tim Watson. We've been looking at this issue quite closely, and note that industry-wide, since the oil price, had its steep downturn, industry-wide costs seem to have gone down on average 24%. And then we also look closely at Suncor's base operations and see where they're producing. These are public numbers. And our belief, and I think Suncor's belief as well, is that Fort Hills will be lower cost than their current operations. So with that as context, over to Tim.
Thanks, Don. With respect to an update on the operating cost estimate, as Suncor is moving through the second half of the year, they are doing a total project forecast update as well as a schedule update for the remaining portion of the project, and included in that work is an update to the operating cost estimate. So we expect to see that at the tail end of the fourth quarter of this year.
Great, that's very helpful. And then just one quick one here, just here on met coal. You did mention here, and I think the point is well taken, that your stripping levels have remained consistent in terms of costs there relative to the coal being mined. Is there flexibility, if you do think about a downside case, is there significant flexibility to reduce stripping costs temporarily to boost cash? Or is that not really a choice that you have?
A brief comment, then over to Robin. I think we've been through perhaps the most severe time period in met coal pricing relative to industry costs that we've seen in our lifetimes, and we didn't do that. So that's just what the history shows. In terms of what options we have, over to you, Robin.
Yeah, it's an operating philosophy to maintain a long-term view of coal, and we resist, obviously, very strongly any move that would jeopardize that. And to take advantage of a short period of time, I think, would be short-sighted. And so we've been able to keep that focus in coal and not and be able to come out of this downturn stronger now than we were going into the downturn. So for us, it's a philosophical choice more than anything.
You always pay an extraordinary price later, and it's just not worth it.
Okay, thanks very much, and congrats on the good operating results today. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, please press star one at this time if you have a question, and please limit your inquiry to one question plus a follow-up question. Our next question is from Lucas Pipes with FBR & Company. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and congrats on another very good quarter. I wanted to ask a little bit more about your strategy, given the improvement in the commodity markets. You've done the refinancing earlier this year. Just big picture, how are you thinking about growth? There were a couple of questions this morning about organic growth opportunities. How would you rank the opportunities in today's marketplace? Thank you.
So the next year or so, we're focused on Fort Hills and seeing that finished and brought on stream either the very end of 2017, early 2018. And that'll add, the fourth leg, fourth core business in a long life operation in a good geopolitical jurisdiction and add some good balance to the portfolio. So we're looking forward to that. We have all the cash on the balance sheet now that we need to complete that. And we haven't touched the $3 billion U.S. credit facility that we have, and we don't intend to touch it this year. And I think we have a reasonable shot at finishing the project without ever touching it. So that does give us some capacity to look at other opportunities. It's our job to look at other opportunities anyway. So everything that you see rumored to be on the block or whatever, we do review. Sometimes we go and visit them. Occasionally we put in a bid. But In terms of acquisitions, we've seen, at least in copper, which we have a long-term interest in, that assets have traded at prices that discount a, you know, a reasonable copper price, usually over $3. So it's not as if there are any fire sales going on from what we see. We do have our own key projects in Quebrada Blanca 2, QB2, and Nueva Union, both of which we think the world is going to need, and both of which are solid projects. The QB2 timeline, it looks like the earliest that we could sanction that project would be first quarter of 2018. That's if everything went perfectly on the permitting timeline. And as you're probably well aware, that usually there have been delays and sometimes long delays, so we'll see. But that is our highest priority after finishing Fort Hills. And we've been doing a lot of work on reducing the capital costs, and we'll announce the results of that towards the end of the year. So that's something that we'd really like to get on with, but we just aren't certain of the timeline. We compare anything else out there against QB2 in that because we control QB2 with 76.5%, we could always defer that if there was something that's better that came along. But so far, we haven't seen that. QB2 is in, again, a good geopolitical jurisdiction. It's an area where, you know, we already have a mine operating. Shovels and trucks are there. The people are there. The access is there. So there's a lot of advantages. And it's a tremendous reserve that'll run for 50 years probably and be expanded and so on. So it's one of those core assets that we'd really like to have as part of the portfolio. I think when it starts, it would be the 12th largest copper mine in the world, but likely move up the league tables as others decline in production with declining head grade and as QB2 ultimately gets expanded. So that's kind of key to our growth strategy, but it does take a while before we get going with it. Meanwhile, we'll be watching others. Nueva Union is progressing well. We're having a really good working relationship with Goldcorp, and that one's probably a couple years behind the QB2 timeline. So does that answer your question?
Yeah. No, that was very helpful. Don, I appreciate those details. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from David Wang with Morningstar. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my question. I just had one on coal. So, you know, the cash costs that you guys have achieved have been pretty great, and the reduction in guidance seems to indicate that you've been cutting even more. Is there further potential for cost cutting as you look out in the next year or so, or even beyond that? And do you think that you're cutting costs in line with other competitors in the market, or how do you see your cost cutting versus the other industry players?
Robin, over to you.
Yeah, I guess if you think about the cost cutting, it sort of happened in three stages. So the first stage is really around increasing equipment productivity, and we think we're in the top quartile in terms of that metric. The next area of focus for us has been maintenance and procurement, and we're working through that this year, and we continue to see good progress on that. So through the rest of this year, we anticipate our ability to certainly hit the cost guidance that we put out. As time goes on, coal's probably 3 to 4 years into a cost-cutting optimization kind of stage, and so we're seeing certainly the increase is now becoming more difficult to find big numbers, but we still make progress. We're still making good progress, and the cost cutting that we have achieved is all sustainable. We'll carry that forward. So we're pretty confident at the level we're at. Very competitive.
All right, great. Thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions registered at this time. I would like to turn the meeting back over to you, Mr. Lindsay.
Okay, well, thank you all for attending today. We're very pleased with the quarter, but I have to say we're looking forward to Q3 as coal production and coal sales ramp up, and in a market that appears to have a decent tailwind in both steelmaking coal and in zinc. So we look forward to speaking to you in October. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. The conference has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time, and we thank you for your participation.